I can't really remember when I last had any hope, and I certainly can't remember when anyone else did either. Because really, since women stopped being able to have babies, what's left to hope for?
The world was stunned today by the death of Diego Ricardo, the youngest person on the planet. The youngest person on Earth was 18 years, 4 months, 20 days, 16 hours, and 8 minutes old.
The ultimate mystery, why are women infertile? Some say it's genetic experiments, pollution. Why do you think we can't make babies anymore?
Doesn't matter. It's all over in 50 years. It's too late.
Move along! Move along!
Hello, Theo. How've you been? I'm sorry about the theatrics. Police have been a pain lately.
I haven't seen you for nearly 20 years.
Need your help. Not for me, a girl. Need to get her to the coast, past security checkpoints. It's hard for me to look at you. He had your eyes.
So why did you come to me?
I trust you.
Show him.
Now you know what's at stake.
We have to meet the boat.
What is this boat?
The Human Project have sent a boat.
The Human Project?
Yes, the greatest minds in the world working for a new society.
Your baby is the miracle the whole world has been waiting for.
We will find a way to get you to the Human Project, I promise you.
We're almost there, Keith. We're almost there.
All right, we're back. Welcome to Celluloid Jelly.
Hey, guys. Wow, that was a long nap.
Yeah. I feel like Rip Van Winkle.
Nah, just sleepy. Hibernation.
Yeah. I should probably address that.
It's up to you.
We've been away. We haven't posted anything since the Shining episode, which came out for Halloween. For the most part, the reason for that is twofold. I guess one, you know, our work schedules have gotten pretty hectic during the holidays since we both work retail. And I'm also going through some personal stuff. We're not gonna bore you on the podcast with any kind of details, but. You know, those of you who do know me, we probably talked about this already, and if not, it's not something I'm necessarily comfortable with. We'll just keep it to movies.
All right.
So
that's fine.
Reach out to me, in private if you're interested or you want to, but we apologize for the 6-week layoff here. So we hope many of you have stayed with us during that time period. Uh-huh. So today we're gonna,
well, you can see this as a little Christmas gift, guys.
There you go. We're gonna have to record one more time before Christmas. You said you want to do Die Hard, right?
I'm fine with Die Hard, but whatever. I don't think it's necessary for us to do a Christmas one because I don't think it'll come out until after Christmas.
Yeah, probably not. At least the way that things are going right now. But in any case, we have another one lined up. Today we're doing Children of Men, which both of us watched. God, at this point, well over a month ago.
Yes, I'd say it's probably been, according to my list, I saw it sometime before the end of October. So
yeah, and for me, it was a little bit later than that, but not much. So mm-hmm. So we're not quite as fresh up on Children of Men as we'd like to be, but we're going to talk about it anyway. And I'm sure we'll talk about a bunch of other stuff as well. We're not in our usual recording spot. And sounds like there's an echo to me, but when we played the little test back, it sounded fine. So hopefully you guys don't get too annoyed by that.
Yeah. Well, not as annoyed as you are with our voices generally. Anyway.
Yeah, generally. Yes.
So
Thank you.
We'll test out these acoustics and see if it works for our purposes.
Yeah, but it's thank you to Collector's Corner for providing us with a spot.
Yep, 7911 Hartford Road.
That's right. Come and get your Collector's Corner Army t-shirt and all of your holiday swag.
Definitely.
There you go. Get those stocking stuffers here at Collector's Corner.
You guys like Spider-Man? Who doesn't like Spider-Man? Have you seen that Spider-Man?
Have you seen the new Spider-Man trailer? Not impressed, but still excited for the movie.
Okay, well, let's get into that.
Go for it.
Okay. Now, I thought it was kind of funny because when I saw you after, I guess it was the day after the trailer had come out, you know, the response to it seems to be very overwhelming. And, you know, I think the
positive, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Overwhelmingly positive. I thought the trailer looked all right, but as a teaser, you know, a lot of that stuff doesn't really have much in there that, you know, has me super excited.
Sure. Yeah.
We've seen Tom Holland before. I get the humor. So tonally, I feel like we already know kind of what to expect. But, you know, obviously the movie doesn't come out for another 8 months. So, I mean, I'm sure action stuff and post-production will remedy quite a bit of that. And, you know, once we get a little bit closer and see a more action-oriented trailer, I think I'll be a little bit more impressed. No. Suffice to say, it's Spider-Man. He's my favorite superhero, so I think I'll, you know, it's not like I'm not going to see it opening day.
Of course.
Yeah, but it's, you know, I wonder, did I maybe watch a different trailer than most people?
Yeah, for me, I'm with you 100%. It did not knock me out visually, and that was the biggest thing, is I felt a little bit underwhelmed with it in that respect. You know, Tom Holland was great in Civil War, and... You know, it looks like you're going to get some of the same, you know, hopefully the same kind of, you know, quick, you know, funny dialogue from him. That sort of awkward but brainy quality that Peter Parker is known for seems to be, he's got that down pat. I was not impressed with the way Vulture looked. And just in general, the action scenes did not pop for me. But, you know, it's a teaser. They're probably holding the good stuff back. You know, it's just... I know that opening scene where he's, I guess, thwarting a bank robbery, mm-hmm. or is it an ATM robbery removal or something like that?
Yeah.
And they're all dressed in Avengers, like, Halloween masks. That's taken right out of a comic panel, right?
That's really the worst. Those costumes are, like, from, like, the 70s. Or the masks are designed to look like the really cheapy 70s-style ones.
Like the Don Post masks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Used to have a bunch of Star Wars Donald Post costumes.
Yeah, I think I've seen the picture of you in a Darth Vader one.
Yeah, I wore that thing like 8 years in a row, even when I was too big for it.
Yeah. Yeah, just stop this past year. from 2000.
That was probably almost 30 years ago, actually. So, but yeah, that's I remember those. They always pinched. And the plastic on the face would sort of like crack, and then it would like cut into you. They'd be like little razors on your face. It was horrible.
It was the best.
Yeah, it was the best because you were excited, but it was still like, looking back, that was the worst part.
As long as you got who you wanted.
Facial.
Like, I don't want to be Andy Ragdoll, Mom.
I was a really like cute cowboy one year. Like, I've got a picture of that too. It's one of my favorite childhood pictures, actually.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. I'm holding, like, laying on the steps, holding the gun up in the air with a smile. Cowboy hat tipped over 3/4.
I don't really remember if I had many Halloween photographs from when I was a kid. I'm sure there were albums or something, but yeah, maybe I'll find one.
My sisters would always dress up as, like, the cheap, easy stuff, you know, ghosts and hobos and things like that. Mm-hmm. But they always looked good, though. Like, they really, like, did it upright. Like, when they were a hobo, they were a fucking good hobo.
See, I was like, I don't think hobo would be easy, because that seems to me like you would need a lot of props.
No, they just look like scuzz balls. They did it right, though. And one year, I think my sister Kathy was a clown, and she was a really good clown.
I think I was a clown one year.
Yeah.
Might be wrong. I don't recall. I think my favorite costume as a kid, though, was like the Rocketeer, probably one year.
We'll have to do that on the podcast, because I know you really love that movie.
I like a lot of Joe Johnston films.
Me too. October Sky, you know, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, well, it's December now.
Yeah. we'll have to, because I haven't watched The Rocketeer probably since it was, you know, a year or two out of theaters, like when it first hit, like, home video on VHS.
Yeah, I was a really big fan of it, and you know what? You know, not to mention it, I don't think I've picked up the Blu-ray yet, but...
Timothy Dalton, Jennifer Connelly, Billy Campbell. Mm-hmm. I'm all about that. We should do that.
Anthony Quinn?
Put that on the slate for next year.
No, Terry Quinn.
Not Anthony Quinn. That would have been a whole different character.
Okay.
Spider-Man.
Halloween.
We got off on a tangent, as we usually do. But yeah, so I'm, you know, still looking forward to it. They've got my $12 because it's Spider-Man.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
what else? Another big trailer came out just a few days ago.
A lot of trailers. Fast and Furious. Well, you see the Dunkirk hit today.
Yeah, I saw that earlier. You know, I guess... we probably hit, like, what, 10? 10 or 11 this morning? Pretty early.
Yeah, I just saw it. Unfortunately, I usually don't like to watch trailers on my phone. I usually... I'm pretty good about being disciplined and not doing that.
Hold it right in front of your face.
but for Dunkirk, because I was actually on my way here already to meet you, I decided to go ahead and watch it on my phone.
Okay. I only watched it the once, so...
Me too. Yeah, it looked really impressive, though, and I was surprised because I don't remember hearing a cast list for the movie, but there are a bunch of people that popped
Cillian
up.
Yeah, Murphy, Kenneth Branagh...
It looks like Tom Hardy is a pilot, right?
Oh,
I think there's,
I don't know,
there's a shot of Tom Hardy as a pilot in that, too, so... Mm.
I was just taken by all the misery.
Yeah, it looks really good though. I was impressed. It looked really great visually, but it didn't look like it was overproduced and CGI'd, you know, the way a lot of other like modern war movies are. Mm-hmm. Not a ton of CGI backdrops. You know, there's a minimalist quality to it almost. Mm-hmm. But I really liked it.
Oh yeah, I see. Maybe it's probably, you know, even I guess the idea of Dunkirk is that, you know, there's a lot of maybe loneliness and isolation. Yeah. Kenneth Branagh's got a line at the end of it where he says you could almost eat at home. And there's, you know, I guess the movie itself makes a point of hammering the point of hope. But, you know, in their situation historically, that's got to have been like a very stressful and, you know.
Yeah, well, it's
hopeless
war.
Situation.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, not just Dunkirk, but other battles that, you know,
sure.
Soldiers are facing the exact same fears.
No, like,
exact same.
I know a little bit of Dunkirk, but I can't say I'm big on history, let alone like British military stuff. So.
Yeah, me either. But it looks good. It's Chris Nolan, and I'll forgive him for Interstellar. Let's bring it on.
We'll see what happens next.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the guy's got talent. He can do it. Mm-hmm. Just listen to our Inception podcast. There's a little plug for you. Listen to our Inception podcast.
We heap it on.
we both really like that movie, and that was one of the better episodes. So if you've stuck with us this long, you know that already.
Yep. Okay, well, Fate of the Furious.
Fate of the Furious. Hate the fucking title, but man, that trailer looks good.
I made a mention to you earlier that they kind of, you know, missed opportunity to make it F8 as Fate of the Furious.
They could always change it before the release.
Yeah, make it shittier.
Yeah. you know, once they got away from the drag racing aspect of this series and the street culture and took it more to like a heist movie, you know, sort of like caper films, mm-hmm. like I've really enjoyed the over the top quality, the ridiculousness of them, them beating the, you know, the family thing into the ground, you know, like it's become, you know, funny.
It's self-aware.
Yeah, every time they talk about family in the movie, it just makes me chuckle, like, but not in a bad way. And like a
salumi familia.
And it looks like they got everybody back. Like, Kurt Russell's back in it. Mm-hmm. Looks like they got Scott Eastwood in it.
Did they get those...
Charlize Theron. She's perfect for...
Did they get those Mexican guys from the fourth film?
I don't know.
They were absent in the last two.
I don't know. I mean, they can't, you know, they can't use Han or Giselle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're gone. But too bad. Gal Gadot, like her.
I think she's going to be fine with the Fast and Furious.
We'll see how Wonder Woman does this summer, then we'll see if she does.
If it does poorly, she's got a lifetime of like conventions that she can go to.
Oh, the fans will eat her alive.
I think they'll be fine. She looks good, and you know, I feel like I'm more interested in this film than I am in a lot of like the Zack Snyder produced films. So.
Well, I'm sure most people read this last week, and I know that you know this already, but it looks like they pushed back Justice League 2 so that they can film the Batman first. which is probably a good move, especially since a lot of their core fan base is overwhelmingly not in favor of Zack Snyder continuing as like one of the main creative
architects.
Yeah. So, you know, they get a couple extra movies under their belt before he comes back, and that allows other filmmakers to get in and sort of like stir the pot a little bit, and then he can kind of play off of that. I mean, the guy's a talented visualist, so, you know, as long as somebody else is writing the script, I think he can put a good movie out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's like you don't want another sucker punch with superheroes.
Yes.
You know.
He's
sorry
he's,
if you're listening, Zach, but I did not like Sucker Punch.
Zach, I'm not gonna apologize for this, but Sucker Punch was the worst movie I saw in the theater that year.
Dude, I like your Dawn of the Dead. I even liked Man of Steel, like even though there are things about it that I don't like. 300's just okay. I like Watchmen. I dig Watchmen, actually. You know, it's long, but
since we're on this, Zach, I wanna know, what were you thinking for that trailer for Legend of the Guardians?
I still haven't seen that movie.
Well,
it good?
I don't know. I just all I remember from the trailer is like, "Hi, I'm Zack Snyder. Let me.
Oh,
I'm here to tell you about my new movie. It's got owls like claws, and you know,
I know
speak really English accents.
I know
Hedwig.
I can see into the future.
Jim Sturgis.
And as you're saying this right now, there's one listener who used to work at Suncoast, and. I'll tell you, well, it's Jason. And right now he's going, "Hi, I'm John Travolta."
Hi, Jason.
And only he knows why. So a little shout out for you there, Jason.
Way to steal the thunder from Zack Snyder. Yeah, I think that's a good choice. You know, certainly I felt, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, that Ben Affleck's Batman performance was one of the best things about Batman v Superman, The Dawn of Justice.
I think he's really good, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's, I mean, no offense to Ben Affleck, who I like and I have defended over and over and over and over again at Suncoast for the last couple of years. But he looks the part, and that's really all you need
mm-hmm.
in this. Like, so it's not like there's any heavy lifting being done by Ben Affleck. He's perfect for it. Just let him hit his mark, say his lines, growl a little bit, and then do the action scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all you need. So, and that the Batman might have a little bit more of dramatic heft that he can, you know, get into.
Yeah,
but
with
for
him,
Batman, Superman, it wasn't necessary.
Yeah, it wasn't his movie. So, I mean, with him being so
why
much more
did
heavily,
you say that name?
Being so much more heavily involved in his solo Batman film, I think, you know, the skills that he's learned that's earned him multiple award nominations, I think that'll finally bring a little bit more prestige to the Batman.
Martha will not die tonight.
Man.
I love it. I love you, Ben. Love you. Even though you're a Pats fan, and, you know, I'll forgive you.
He's Bostonian. There's something wrong with cheering for your home team.
Home team, that's right. Even though you love Tom Brady, I still love you. Don't worry. We gotta work on that, though. Can't you be a Chiefs fan or something?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Ben.
Whatever.
How about a Buccaneers fan?
Browns fan.
Ooh, no, I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Sorry for our Cleveland listeners out there.
You could always just switch to basketball.
Yeah, the Celtics are pretty good, aren't they? I haven't been following
them yet. Cleveland, the Cavaliers, is what I was talking about. They do still have a team. And, you know, the Indians have been doing pretty well the last few years. You know.
Oh, I fucking love Major League. We should do that movie when baseball season rolls back around.
Okay, there's plenty of baseball films.
Yeah, so. We could do a whole run of baseball films.
All right.
Well, talked about that.
Yeah.
We talked about doing, like, quote-unquote, our favorite baseball
movies. Didn't happen. Okay.
We started the podcast late last year, though. Like, mm-hmm. We kind of missed baseball season a little bit.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, we'll get it this year.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll do Major League.
That scoff wasn't, like, you know, not believing. I just think it's funny.
I'm a big fan of The Natural, actually. I would do that. So,
okay.
I mean, yeah. I like all the comedy ones, too. I'd watch Bull Durham again, and I love Field of Dreams.
Yeah, there's plenty. I do watch
8 Men Out. Gotta watch that for the cast alone.
Yeah. I've never seen 8 Men Out.
Oh, it's good. Yeah. I think you'd like it. It's got everybody.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the cast is pretty good, so I don't see why I wouldn't.
Well, yeah, we got, again, just like with Spider-Man, we got off of the Fast and the Furious track on that.
Well, that's okay. I mean, it's Fast and the Furious. You guys have all seen Chandler, right?
The movie's 3.5 minutes long. You basically just watch the whole movie. So.
It's explosions. There's submarine. And I'm going to call it right now. So what day is it? December 14th?
Yep.
Vin Diesel's character, Dom, he's just pulling a Loki slash... You know,
Silva for, slash Joker.
Yeah, where you know he's on the other side, but that's intentional.
Yeah.
Now,
I don't think anybody believes that he's actually a bad guy who's turned against quote unquote his family.
The family.
They're turning these things into like the new Corleones.
I guess so.
Dom's the Godfather.
He's like, I don't want to have friends.
I got family.
And now The Rock's part of his family.
I can't even imagine watching Vin Diesel actually act in, like, a good movie. Like, when's the last time that you saw Vin Diesel in a decent movie other than, like, I guess Saving Private Ryan? like, Boiler Room? Like, he comes in for,
Boiler
like...
Boiler Room is pretty good.
He's in only one scene, right? For Boiler Room? Or no, that's no, Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck's in one scene in Boiler Room. Vin Diesel.
I was like, Vin Diesel's on the cover. He's like the whole movie.
No, well, Giovanni Ribisi is the movie. Like, he's the main character, right? Vin Diesel's like the he's the guy who is like the corruptive influence on Giovanni Ribisi, right?
I was gonna say
I haven't seen that movie.
I was gonna say theaters. Ryan Phillippe, but that's The Insider, isn't it? With Russell Crowe.
The Insider.
Yeah, is Ryan Phillippe in that with Russell Crowe?
No, no, you're thinking of. Oh, shit. What is that movie?
Listen.
Look, I'm not going to look it up. It doesn't matter. But, like, that's not... Like, The Insider is the one with Al Pacino, Russell Crowe, where he's the
whistleblower.
Yeah, the whistleblower for the tobacco company.
What am I thinking of? It doesn't matter. Let's move on.
You're thinking of the one where Ryan Phillippe is supposed to... is that Breach?
I've never seen that. With Chris Cooper?
Yeah, that's the one, I think.
I've never seen
it. He's in Breach, where he's supposed to investigate his own boss to see if he's a turncoat. I think that's it.
Turncoat.
Turncoat, motherfucker.
okay, well, you know, well, Dunkirk, Spider-Man, Fast and the Furious.
There's another one. I'm missing one. Transformers.
Yeah. I didn't watch it.
You didn't? Nope. Oh, man.
Who gives a shit? Maybe Mark Wahlberg will show up in Fast and the Furious because, you know,
I think
Charlize Theron's character is the same character from Italian Job.
I honestly think that, like, in the 10th Fast and the Furious movie, that they should have, like, a dream team of bad guys that includes, like, Daniel Craig, Tom Cruise, get the other secret agent guys, like, out together into one movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be pretty cool.
Well, it's a trilogy right now for, 8, 9, and 10, right? Yeah. It's being conceived, so we'll see. They got to have something big. They have to have something big for the last one.
I'd love to see Tom Cruise play a bad guy again, because Collateral fucking rules. Mm. Yeah, I love that movie.
Man, I like that movie a lot, too.
Yeah, we should do that movie, too. But this whole podcast...
That sad little carousel.
This whole hour is just going to be us going, yeah, we should do that movie, too.
Yeah,
like, we're just... Here, we're
just going to go and start watching movies that we talk about.
Collateral.
Oh, make sure you guys have your pens out, too.
Major League.
Plus, we're going to have...
What else did we say?
Pootie Tang.
No. I've never seen that. Didn't Chris Rock write and direct that?
Missing out. Louis C.K. directed it.
Oh, that's right.
Wrote and directed it.
Chris Rock produced it. Yeah.
Pootie Tang's a character from his series, The Chris Rock Show.
I'll tell you what, we can do Pootie Tang if we can get Louis C.K. to come on and be the third guest.
All right, I know a guy who gets to write for him.
let's make it work. He can Skype in. I would love that.
Okay. Whatever.
Just look forward to that in 2017. All right.
All right. Well,
what else is going on?
Well, what movies have you been watching lately? I've been watching a lot of stuff.
Because of certain things that have been happening, I haven't been watching as many movies as I'd like. You know, I've seen most of the big ones in theaters. You know, I've been able to see Fantastic Beasts and Moana. I liked both of those.
I haven't seen either of those.
Fantastic Beasts, I would put it sort of in the middle of the Harry Potter series as far as quality. It's not as good as the best few, but it's not nearly as bad as, you know, a couple of the bottom ones. Mm-hmm. None of them are bad, so, like, it's in good company. You know, it's a solid film. But I think Prisoner of Azkaban, Order of the Phoenix, I even put Half-Blood Prince and Deathly Hallows Part 2 in front of that.
Okay. So just, you know, the Chris Columbus films are the lesser films.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say any, I mean, it's all over the freaking internet, but, like, you know, obviously there is not a twist, but a reveal at the end of the film that will set up where they're going to go with this whole franchise, since they're doing three movies. You know, I saw it coming, but it was still, like, a good payoff, like, because you're waiting the whole movie for it to happen, so when it does happen, you're like, all right. Moana was excellent, though. The music was done by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is the creator, writer of Hamilton on Broadway. So he is a gigantic star. He hosted Saturday Night Live recently. He actually was on Drunk History a couple weeks ago and did an episode specifically on Hamilton, which was pretty funny. I watched that. And, you know, you can definitely tell it's him, even if you didn't know it was him, because some of the songs in Moana have a cadence and a sort of like a sound of the Hamilton musical. But it was excellent. Really good. The Rock is good. The Rock sings in it. And he's the worst singer in the movie, but he's still okay.
Yeah. He's better than Pierce Brosnan.
Actually, his song, the song he sings is one of the more memorable ones. Mm. So, but there's some great stuff in it. And definitely recommend that. And I'm not a huge animated Disney guy. I don't see every Disney movie that comes out. And you know, I saw Frozen, but like there's a bunch of them that I never saw Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, watch it. You know, comfort of your home.
Yeah, but it's really good. Check it out. Definitely recommend that. We're going to see Rogue One tomorrow.
Yes, I have tickets.
And we have tickets, yes. And as long as there are extra tickets for the 10:30, I'll be joining you for both.
Okay.
So we'll give you a little plug for the Senator Theater in Baltimore. You know, make sure you guys go see it there. You know, it's a great old Art Deco style movie house. Beautiful place. It's like walking backwards in time when you go see a movie there, to the heyday of Hollywood and all that such, you know, stuff. But it's really great. And if you haven't been there and you live in Baltimore, shame on you.
you're going to curse us then.
I was. But you know, if you don't live in Baltimore, you happen to be traveling to see family here over the holidays, it will be well worth your time to spend a couple of hours seeing the new Star Wars movie in their big main theater. So that's, you know, a terrific place.
Yeah. I know they just announced that they were going to be doing Gremlins this evening, one time
tonight,
show,
yeah.
7 p.m.
You have the time.
Yeah, I do, but I also have other things I have to take care of.
Yeah, me too.
For me, I guess I saw two new films, recently, but you know, since the last time we recorded, I guess I'd seen Doctor Strange.
Loved it. It's good.
And that might be the last big film I saw since we recorded last. But I saw Allied and Nocturnal Animals.
Oh yeah, just saw that too.
Yeah,
yeah. We didn't see that together though.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think I saw
A Night Apart.
Yeah, I guess.
Now I liked it, but didn't love it.
Nocturnal Animals.
Yeah.
It was very intense. To be honest, like, I like the technical quality in the film, and I think that it's a movie I haven't fully been able to wrap my head around yet.
And this is Tom Ford's latest movie, and he did A Single Man. And for those of you, I mean, I it's not getting a huge push by the studio, so it's got Amy Adams, Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Shannon, among others.
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yep.
You know, Tom Ford, you know, former fashion, or I guess he's still a fashion designer. You know, whenever he makes a collection, he always thinks of Derek Zoolander. so he's got that going for him.
Which is nice.
but yeah, I suggest watching it. It's a very heavy, very dark, kind of like punch you in the gut type of movie.
I didn't get that, to be honest. Like, there's one moment in particular, of course, and I'm sure you know which one I mean, that is, like, extremely tough. The rest of the film, I was more intrigued by the juxtaposition between the sort of like backwoods noirish quality of the Jake Gyllenhaal story
and the modernness,
the posh, yeah, the like Amy Adams stuff,
yeah, pretentious.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of great editing that kind of puts you know, images on top of one another that are very similar, so that kind of puts the character into a different mindset, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I feel that the film's manipulative, but yeah, like I think good performances overall. Aaron Taylor Johnson specifically, he's a guy that's very memorable in the picture. And I think when you're able to kind of like steal the movie almost, because I, you know, going to the film, I only knew Jake Gyllenhaal and Amy Adams was in it because they're on a poster. I did not realize such a wealth of like other characters, like you know, Michael Sheen, Michael Shannon.
Yeah, Michael Sheen. And
Michael Sheen's only in for a very little bit.
What's the name of the woman who plays his wife in that? She was in Oblivion with Tom Cruise.
I've never seen Oblivion. Is she the other woman?
Yeah. I'm drawing a blank on her name. You know, I'm sure somebody in the comment section will be like, dumbass, it's this person.
Dumbass.
Dumbass.
What are you doing, bud?
I thought Amy Adams was good, but I liked her a lot better in Arrival. Mm-hmm. Very different movie.
I still haven't seen that.
Arrival, I liked a lot. Okay. I was probably, you know, in the target demographic. You know, I'm a big fan of Denis Villeneuve, who did Prisoners and Incendies and Enemy. And what was the last one he did with Emily Blunt? Sicario. So I like all of his movies, you know, to varying degrees, but in general, I like him as a filmmaker a lot. And Arrival has a really nice science fiction quality to it. It doesn't go overboard with technology, and it's more about...
more of a grounded...
Yeah, well, it's good science fiction in that it's about social issues more than it is about action and things like that. So... Like the movie we're going to talk about today. Yeah, even though a lot of people consider Children of Men sort of an action movie because of some of the camera work and some of the, the set pieces.
An action film? Those guys are wrong.
Yeah, but yeah, Children of Men is a movie about ideas. So, and hope.
Yeah.
It's a good Christmas movie.
Yeah, it's also predicting what could be our future.
Yeah, closer than you might think, I guess, probably.
10 years.
Time to move to London.
Ooh, I don't know about that. They're not doing too well over there. Okay.
Put you in a cage and put a hood over your head.
Yeah, let's not joke about that. Okay, well, what's Children of Men about, CJ?
Oh my gosh. You're putting me on the spot here.
Yeah. How do you like it?
Yeah. This is your job. You do it. I like to sit back and wait and just, you know, put some well-timed comments in there and let you do the rest of the talking. Children of Men is based on a book by P.D. James. Am I getting that right?
I don't know.
Hang on, I got it.
Okay, you pull up the Wikipedia.
Yes, it's based on a novel by the same name, Children of Men, by P.D. James, starring Clive Owen, Julianne Moore, Michael Caine, Chiwetel Ejiofor, an unrecognizable Charlie Hunnam. Screenplay is by Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, I think when Children of Men came out, the only two things I'd seen Charlie Hunnam in were probably like
Cold Undeclared.
Mountain. Cold Mountain and Undeclared.
Yeah.
Those were probably the only two things.
Written by Alfonso Cuarón, Timothy Sexton, David Arata. And directed by Alfonso Cuarón. And I guess I should say this up front because we're going to talk about it quite a bit, I'm assuming. Cinematography by Emmanuel Lubezki.
Mm-hmm.
Chavo.
We're going to be talking about that a lot, I bet.
So it essentially takes place in a near future where humanity has lost the ability to reproduce. It's a bit vague in the movie. It's a little bit more specific in the novel, but it seems that women have lost the ability to reproduce in the movie, which is different from the book. In the book, it's men who have not been able to hold up their end of the bargain. But since this film was made by a man, There you go, ladies. You got flip-flopped on. But it's been 18 years since a baby was born. And at the beginning of the film, the youngest person on the planet dies. Correct?
Yes, at 18.
Yes.
Baby Diego.
Yeah. we'll get into the minutia of it, but essentially Clive Owen is a low-level, like, government bureaucrat who gets pulled into a plot by a renegade group to smuggle a refugee to a different renegade group called the Human Project.
It's been a while since you watched this guy.
Because he's got connections to the government and can get like a visa passport type thing for the refugee.
Mm-hmm.
He also happens to be the estranged husband of the group leader, played by Julianne Moore, who certainly uses their relationship to her advantage when she, you know, gets him to do this for them.
Mm-hmm.
As he gets pulled in, certain things happen and revelations come, and it turns out that this refugee woman is actually pregnant with what will be the first human child in 18 years. And so it becomes a struggle between the ideology of getting her to the right people so that they can take care of the baby, take care of the mother, and test and hopefully, you know, find a cure for this. And the ability to use it as more of a political power tool.
Okay.
So,
We should also...
I ramble a little bit. Hey, I'm a little bit rusty. Sorry.
We should also explain that, in this future where people are unable to reproduce, the world has collapsed. It's dystopian, and London is the only country, or is the only city, or
Britain's one of the only last
to shoulder soldier on.
Right. Yeah. Britain has one of the last few remaining governments that's functioning on the planet.
Yeah. It's also turned very authoritarian.
Yes.
There's been a heavy push against immigrants and people who are the family of immigrants.
And
heavy deportation. And
there's been a lot of recent language here in the States that makes this a very relevant choice for us.
I think
today.
So.
Yeah.
The darkness of the film certainly does reflect current American issues, as well as, I imagine,
world issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brexit. And a number of...
What's going on in Russia? What's going on in Africa?
What's going on in the Philippines?
Yeah. That's, it's... Things are getting bad out there, guys. Keep the faith. Do the right thing.
Watch good movies and learn lessons.
Power to people.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's Children of Men, I think, is...
Back to the movie.
What can we do? Children of Men is an amazingly impressive picture. The year it came out, 2006, I guess. Far and away, it became one of my favorite films of the year. Might have been my favorite film of the year, period, 2006.
Yeah, it was definitely in the top few. I think Pan's Labyrinth was that year, right?
Year before.
Are you sure?
I think so. Because I'm pretty...
I thought this was nominated the same year Pan's Labyrinth and Babel. Because didn't they make a big thing about them at the Oscars being the Three Amigos?
Oh, well, I don't know. Well, Babel was 2005. See, well, I know, like, Pan's Labyrinth, though, was released...
I'm sure in Spain.
In 2005. So I think that was their qualifier, 2005.
Okay. Sorry to get you off track.
That's okay. What was I saying?
It was one of your favorite movies.
Yeah.
It was also, you know, the...
It won, like,
Americans.
What, two or three Oscars, probably, I hear?
I don't think so.
Maybe.
It was nominated for some technical awards, but it missed getting nominated for, like, picture and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's...
Great movie, though.
Yeah. We're talking about it. Well,
I'm just reassuring them that they're not listening for nothing. It's a good movie.
I forgot what I was saying. Blah, 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 blah. Okay.
It was also a calling card for Alfonso Cuarón, who at that point had not done Harry Potter yet, right? This was his...
He had done... Like, it was after Prisoner of Azkaban, was like 2004, right? 2003?
Okay. I'm sure you're probably right, but you know, for most people,
because he did not do the next Harry Potter film in favor,
which was Goblet of Fire.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably a good thing for him if he got stuck doing Harry Potter movies every year. I mean, it would have been a pretty big paycheck, but creatively it wouldn't have been.
Sure.
Yeah. He did some pretty really interesting things though with Prisoner of Azkaban, and a lot of those single shot takes and some of the way some of those shots are designed in that film are definitely of a much higher artistic quality than the first two films. And I'm not knocking the first two films, but Chris Columbus is more of a nuts and bolts guy. Kind of solid but not exceptional, and Cuarón is just on a higher level filmmaking wise than Columbus is. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely an upgrade for that series, and Children of Men is another step in the right direction. And
I think Children of Men is I think it's probably my favorite picture that Alfonso Cuarón has done. But he still has a lot of years left in him, hopefully.
Oh yeah.
To make a filmography that's as impressive, or even more impressive than Children of Men.
Yeah. Well, he and Alejandro González Iñárritu seem to be picking projects specifically that challenge them on a technical level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's because Gravity was the last movie that Cuarón did, right?
Yeah. The problem is that
which has what, a 17-minute take at the beginning?
I mean, no, 21, I think. Is that what they said? 17? It's long.
It's super long. And there's, was it two shots in Children of Men that are really long, especially the one?
There's the one that I'm sure we're going to talk about in much more detail.
The opening shot is a single take where he's in the shop getting coffee or whatever, mm-hmm. and then he walks out and then the explosion happens behind him.
Yeah. Well, I think the way the shot goes, I don't think it's, that one might be like 5 or 6 minute bit.
It's a oneer.
I think the other scene would be the scene with like the ping pong balls and there's a little bit of visual trickery to use in that bit to give the illusion of a single take.
Well, those ping pong balls aren't real either.
Yeah.
That's painfully obvious when we're rewatching it. But it's a cute scene though. Like I'm not,
Well, I think, that scene, I'm assuming everyone's seen this. Yeah. Because like typical, we're going to spoil it. But that scene in particular with the ping pong balls, it's meant to take you off guard, I think.
Absolutely.
For the explosion of violence that happens shortly after.
Yeah. And that's when you first, that's when you warm up to Julianne Moore. Mm-hmm. It's that scene. And
it's so cold the rest of the rest
as soon as film. As soon as the ice is broken and you start to really feel a little bit for her and see the chemistry that she and Clive Owen are able to sort of recreate, with two people who haven't seen each other in 20 years... and then all of a sudden she's dead like that, it's horrifying, and it's when Clive Owen breaks down in the next scene as they're burying her in the forest, it's totally earned.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine to go so long with so much pain from the loss of a child and...
You assume that the loss of their child was a... the end of their marriage too.
Yeah, well, they briefly discuss it, and I think that point is very clear. Yeah. That she says she couldn't look at him anymore because the kid looked like him, and he complained that she wanted to move on too quickly and that it didn't matter, and she got upset. And but 20 years later, she comes back into his life, and they start to fall back into what is a very friendly. Relationship where I would assume he's thinking, that they could build on that and reconnect in a significant way. Mm-hmm. And then she is gone, taken away from him by this, horrible act of violence.
Yeah.
That's a very rough scene. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Julianne Moore, in particular, she does a great job playing sort of, detached, cold, icy, in a lot of roles. She'd like...
kind of like Hunger Games.
Yeah, well, exactly like Hunger Games, mm-hmm. really, yeah. So, but I like her quite a bit. Yeah, and she's really, really good. I, to be honest, I'm not sure I've ever seen her give Seventh Son. I was going to say I've never seen her give a bad performance, but that's definitely not true. But she usually is very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Who else is in this film? Michael Caine?
Michael Caine's great as Jasper, who is a pot dealer, but it's unclear what relationship he is to Clive Owen, but there's a fatherly connection there, it seems. Mm-hmm. Whether or not he's actually Clive Owen's father, or whether he may be an uncle, or whether he may just be, you know, somebody who was part of the movement prior. It's established early in the movie that Clive Owen used to be an activist himself.
Yes.
So, you know, Jasper strikes me as the type of person who would have been part of an activist hippie slash movement, you mm-hmm. know, whatever, himself. So they could have met and connected as friends during that and just stayed friends, you know, through those years. Or there could be some sort of blood relation. I don't know. But Caine is great. You know, I read that he based his character on his friendship with John Lennon, which makes a lot of sense.
I can see that with the glasses.
Yeah,
and the hair.
Quaron, I didn't really do a whole lot of research for this, but like this morning, like I pulled up like a couple of interviews and print interviews. And in one of them, Quaron talked specifically about Julianne Moore and Michael Caine. And with Michael Caine, he said that that Michael Caine was a little bit unsure of what he wanted to do, but once they got him in the costume, mm-hmm. the wardrobe, that his body language started to change, and that he was really able to get into it from the outside in. So,
yeah, you know, mentioned specifically Julianne Moore's her character's death when Jasper dies. It's a very tense moment. And you get to see, I mean, you get an idea that something's up with Chiwetel Ejiofor at this point. But, like, he's much more cold-blooded than previous.
Well, that's after
the
they
escape.
Flee, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, like, Chiwetel Ejiofor, like, he after Julianne Moore dies, he becomes the leader of this activist group.
Mm-hmm. By any means.
Right. And the reason Clive Owen leaves with... What's the name of the girl? Is it Key?
Key.
And her caretaker slash nanny.
Yeah. Midwife or something.
Yeah. The reason they leave is because Clive Owen overhears a conversation that the Julianne Moore's death was actually orchestrated by his character. And that they intend to use the baby as a political tool and to kill Clive Owen's character off. So they flee, steal a car, which is a hilarious scene. Like them pushing the car in the
cutting
mud,
gas lines.
Yeah. And you know, the other activists could have easily shot and killed him, but they were afraid to hit the woman. So they, you know, they're
that's just, how important she is.
Yeah. It's, well, I mean, in a world without
absolutely
children, yeah, it's like it's you know better than gold. It's,
way more than gold.
Yeah, like.
The movie. Well, I guess,
I mean, there is nothing else. Like,
I think the movie's got a very heavy. You know, we mentioned it earlier when we're talking about like Dunkirk, but there's a very heavy undercurrent of hope. You know, that kind of like pervades. The film itself tends to be pretty gritty and very dirty and in your face, very nihilistic.
Yeah.
But it's that hope that people are clinging on to that kind of propels these characters forward.
Well,
even the ending. I think. You know, I guess some people consider it kind of like ambiguous. I feel like, you know, the tone of the film kind of lays it out, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I look at this story as more of a renewal. I think at the beginning of this movie, you know, obviously Clive Owen is our main character. He is very cynical. He has given up. He is prepared to live the rest of his life in a sort of
military state. As long as, you know, leave him alone.
Yeah, but, like, you can see there's an early scene where he goes to visit Jasper before, you know, before all this happens. And they're just sitting around smoking pot, and, you know, and Michael Caine, as Jasper, like, he gets up and, like, they're playing rock music, and he gets up and, like, plays a little, like, air guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's a very comfortable quality to it. There's a very easy chemistry between them. And it seems like the Clive Owen character is just kind of, you know, floating along like a, you know, like a leaf on the wind, you know, just not caring what happens. And, you know, he finds a reason to care. He finds a reason to have that hope. And I think that the, you know, the story is about the world regaining its hope.
Sure. So. There's a lot of, you know, obviously the baby and, you know, the possibility of life coming back to humanity as, like, you know, it's not a, it's very clear, I say. And I guess that's firmly, like, you know, illuminated when you see after the baby's born, you know, within this, like, building of, you know, I guess amid squalor. There's more than a handful of Judeo-Christian, like, references to, like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus' birth. And, you know, I think probably, for me anyway, I'd say the most, I guess, affecting scene of the movie that isn't used for, like, shock would be, like, the bit where the army is infiltrating this building full of refugees. They are on the upper level at the end of a massive 20-minute shot, I guess.
Yeah.
And as they're coming down, the baby's crying, and, you know, you see hardened soldiers that are, you know, just, like, minutes ago were, like, shooting people in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, lower their guns and, you know, is it, I guess, kind of like Call for Peace, but, like, yeah it's...
It shakes them out of their hatred. They're so, you know,
it's... So it's the possible, you know, like, you know, hope, you know, once again plays a big role because they realize, you know, the way that they've been living life isn't necessarily, you know, the only way. And, you know, that's an exit for them, you know. Maybe not for personally, but I think for the world. I think the movie, everyone kind of views themselves in a bit of a larger picture, I guess, as opposed to out for themselves.
Well, and, you know, Theo and Key exiting and leaving that scene, you know, with a newborn, you know, certainly recalls, you know, Joseph, Mary, and Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, and she names the baby Dylan, which mm-hmm. was the name of Clive Owen and Julian Moore's son who died during a flu pandemic, right?
Yes.
You know, they're both five-word names, so yeah. Dylan, Jesus, you know, same thing. He's the new Jesus, Dylan.
Five-letter names? Is that what you meant to say?
Yeah, that's what I said, right?
Five-word.
Did I say five-word names?
I don't know. We'll find out when we edit it.
Five-letter names.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, it's, you know, it's like them journeying, you know, to Bethlehem.
Yes.
if you're into that sort of thing.
If you're into
it. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's some people are, some people aren't. I'm not a religious guy, but, you know.
Sure. I mean,
everyone knows the story.
There's the
just
bit,
like Superman.
There's the bit where, you know, Superman's more like Moses than Jesus, though.
That's true, but everyone knows Krypton explodes and the Kents and all that stuff.
Sure. You
know?
Who?
Yeah.
The Kents.
Right? Uncle Ben dies.
Superman shirt right now.
the ship sinks at the end of Titanic.
Yeah. Yeah. Bruce Willis was a ghost the whole time.
I rewatched that movie in a really, really long time.
Yeah,
I wonder if that holds up.
M. Night Shyamalan. Let's watch Unbreakable then instead.
Unbreakable's really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's not get sidetracked again, though. Not yet. Anyway.
That's what this whole thing is about. We get sidetracked. We get back to it.
Yeah.
It's
I mean, you know,
I don't
the,
mind.
The movie,
I don't even care anymore.
Children of Men's got some pretty good tracking shots.
Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty
I don't
good.
Know. I mean, B plus. No, I mean, you know, visually, this is not a movie that's going to, like, dazzle you in like, with a color palette that looks, you know, bright and amazing, you know.
It's very, it's, you know, muted and...
Yeah,
like,
you won't watch this movie and go, wow, that's such a good-looking movie, but, like, the camera work is so spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, you know...
Very dynamic. You get, you know, weird angles and tracking shots that, seem to be magic, I guess, because,
yeah.
you know.
A lot of, I mean, Lubezki is famous for this anyway, but a lot of natural light.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot of, you know, I'm sure they're just using, in many cases, bounce boards and HDMIs.
Yeah.
You know,
but there's an element to these, particularly the long shots where, you know, I guess the staging and the planning is just so incredibly, like, impressive. You know, like I don't even at times, you know this, I don't even know where like my shoes are sometimes, but like this guy used to plan all sorts of stuff for like a shot that, you know, we got a long ass takes, you know.
Yeah.
It's just you don't want to waste a day setting this stuff up, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I guess it should be also noted that this was done on film.
Mm-hmm.
This was not done on HD. You know, these days you can make an entire movie with one take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as the battery will last, you can, they're recording on a hard drive. But this was done, you know, with film running through a camera. So, you know, a film magazine, a 400-foot film magazine runs 20 minutes, right? Something like that. 18 to 20 minutes. So that's all they have, you know. So, and typically film equipment is usually heavier and a little bit more cumbersome than video equipment, which is usually smaller, lighter, easy to carry around. So it's even more impressive that they're able to pull this off with, you know, on film as opposed to video. You know, you can watch a movie like, was it last year or the year before when Victoria came out? Two years ago, you know, when, and Victoria was a German film.
Yeah.
Which was all, the entire movie was one single take. And it was, you know, really impressive. But, you know, shot, you know, with small, like, cameras. And, you know, Cuarón and Lubezki and their operators are running around with cameras that weigh 40, 50 pounds, not something that weighs 8 pounds. So, and then you're moving up and down stairs, you're moving in and out of things, you're moving around soldiers, and explosions are going off.
Going through windshields.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you think about it in those terms, you know, at least for me, that just makes it that much sweeter.
Like, sure, absolutely.
So, I mean, yeah. I can run around this, you know, this room with my phone and be like, look, 8 minutes of all one take, you know, but it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess it depends what's going on in this room. It's nothing.
Well, that's true.
Which is nothing.
What else? Anything else?
About Children of Men? I don't know. It's just a damn good movie.
Like I wish I was able to revisit it a little bit closer to this recording, you know, you know, be more specific about certain things. But in general, I think this is a movie that you guys definitely want
to
see.
Yeah, it's, I think to this day, like it's when I think about the film, I just, you know, kind of take a breath and just kind of take it in, even just a regular thought. In the years to come, this is a movie that's going to, like, stand the test of time, I think. And, you know, I don't think it's too far-fetched to say that, you know, this could be one of the classics of science fiction, certainly a modern-day classic.
I think it definitely fits in with 70s science fiction movies like Soylent Green and mm-hmm. things like that. So I mean, it's
much better than those films, though.
There's something terrific about that era of science fiction as well. I mean, you look at even Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes is sort of, you know, the dystopian about, you know, humanity coming to an end and us ruining the planet on our own and things like that. And, you know, you start to get into the, you know, the Star Wars era of 1980s science fiction fantasy movies and a lot of those heavy ideas and, the social commentary, a lot of that got lost or pushed further back
because in favor of the action, just in shinier suits.
I think if you're a science fiction fan and you love that era of, like, you know, 70s sort of dystopian, you know, science fiction, you will really enjoy this movie. On the other hand, though, nothing's really hitting you over the head that's sciency. So if you're not a science fiction fan, like, I would classify this more of a drama than an action movie. I think on that level, you'd be able to enjoy it for the characterizations and the story and the themes of hope and things like that.
Amongst many other things. I mean, yeah, like, I guess the feeling I tend to get left with, or that I got left with after the film is just, you know, there's a sense of... you know, hope, like, that, like, I would say, like, say a movie like Passion of the Christ. For that film, I did not necessarily feel, like, hope at the end of the movie, even though that's, like, the, you know, the religious view
that's
of that
film.
That's
because Catholics aren't hopeful, we're guilty.
But, like, you know, that movie the idea of that film was supposed to be the torture and punishment that he endures before dying, but he's still...
Right.
Renewed, like, you know, brought back. It's supposed to fill people with hope. I did not get that watching that film. And this is coming from someone, you know, I was an altar boy, all sorts of stuff, as a kid in, you know, Catholic upbringing. But, you know, this movie, because I guess the way it's told, and certainly through the expertise of Cuarón and, like, his team, that, like, you get almost like an uplifting experience at the end. I don't know. Am I articulating that right? Who knows?
I think you're doing all right. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you 100%. Like, you know, this is a movie where you might feel a little bit drained, but you're going to feel good about it, I think, at the end.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where he leaves you at a specific point where, as you said earlier, it's open to interpretation. You can look at it as a hopeful ending, or you can look at it as, you know, something different. But I agree with you. I look at it as something that is intensely hopeful.
Sure.
So, yeah. Good talk,
man. Sour Men's really good.
High five.
Good guys. Good movie, guys.
Check it out.
Okay. Well,
what's on tap for us next?
We were talking about Maltese Falcon.
I did not bring it with me, but I will either drop it off here or, you know, or whatever.
Maybe we'll talk about Rogue One, since we're going to be watching it.
Well, we can do that, yeah. We could talk about Rogue One and the state of Star Wars and what we're looking forward to. I thought there'd be an Episode 8 trailer this week, but I guess I was wrong. Because if it isn't out by today, I guess we're not
Jimmy Kimmel didn't announce it. There you go.
Yeah. So I find that, a little bit perplexing that they wouldn't want to get a teaser out to play in front of Rogue One, but I guess they don't need it. Maybe they'll have a teaser out when Guardians comes.
Stay until the end of the credits.
You never know. Yeah. And they could pop one on us tomorrow. It could be like one of those things where they're just like so confident. They don't need it to be out for a week before the movie. They just
suck
like
it, guys.
You know. But I really thought they would have it.
Mm. Well, I mean, there are a lot of films they get their trailers that Thursday, and then it'll premiere in front of the film.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
Because that would be something to talk about.
That's what we'll talk about in the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Trailer will come out while we're in line.
The headline will be, Luke Skywalker speaks.
It's like, you won't believe what you missed in the Star Wars Episode 8 trailer.
All right, so we'll do Maltese Falcon. We'll talk Rogue One. If you're listening to this, over the next couple of weeks, we certainly wish you a happy holiday and, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, you know, whatever you celebrate, celebrate it well. Be kind to each other, you know,
be happy, be merry.
Don't forget, we love you. And thanks for listening.
Yeah. CJ loves you.
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. I got a lot of love to spread around.
I love some of you guys.
Yeah. Some of you annoy the fuck out of me.
You guys you guys know who I'm talking about.
No, but yeah, we really appreciate it. So we hope you have a good holiday.
Okay. Where can people find you, CJ?
Oh, shit.
You can find CJ in the bathroom.
Right,
guys.
Now,
just
you can find me in the back of my car some days.
Online, where can people find you?
At my sister's house sometimes.
Where can we find your electronic imprint?
Oh, on Twitter, at Setting the Frame. And how about you, Cesar?
Yep, I'm also on Twitter, at Junior Bijo. Or you can find me on my Asian cinema news website, filmsmash.com.
Yes, Film Smash.
Yes.
Is there a new review up you want
to? Not yet. I think I mentioned to you that we had.
Is Joe doing one for you?
He may be doing one for The Wailing from Na Hongjin, which I evidently just got released on Netflix. But it's a brutal, brutal movie.
Wow.
Really good.
Well, I know it's got to be brutal if Joe loves it. So.
Not always.
Shout out to the
players. You like Fantastic Beasts.
That's true. Yeah. He goes back and forth. He likes Star Wars.
Joe likes good movies, and I think that's fine. Doesn't matter totally how.
I feel like it's weird that we're just talking about Joe right now.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll cut that
out. Maybe give him a call.
Yeah. All right. We're going to try this one more time.
The whole thing?
All right. No. I'm just kidding. All right. So, we're a little bit past an hour. Let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm so hungry. I haven't eaten all day.
Thanks for hosting me here at Collector's Corner.
Oh, well, no problem.
Yeah.
It's cool. Now, I guess...
This store is the coolest store in Baltimore since...
15 years.
2001. I can't do math, apparently, in my head.
Yeah.
I think it's less that I couldn't do math and more that I just didn't know what year it was.
Well, it's almost over.
Yeah. Last year I had a lot of trouble moving from 2015 to 2016 as far as like when I was writing dates and things and stuff. So I'm hoping this year to really get, you know, make it work quickly. So I'm not writing 2016 into February.
You got to step, yeah. Well, I don't think it'll be too bad. I think there's plenty of people who are willing to leave 2016 behind them.
Yeah, 2016 was a rough year. When we do our best of the year, that's coming up too. That'll have to be, probably it'll be in January.
Maybe that'll be our next one. I don't know.
No, it'll be in January. We probably got two or three in us before that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we gotta be able to see what we can, that's been released in 2016 first.
Yeah, I'm about 8 movies behind right now to where I want to be as far as new 2016 movies. Yeah. So there's a bunch of stuff that you skip through.
Yeah, I'm not doing too well on my movie a day this year.
Yeah.
I'm at...
you're still ahead of me.
230 something.
In the last month and a half, I have just died off. You know, I've been seeing like 3 movies a week instead of...
Yeah. Luckily, like I had like a back stock of Hong Kong Blu-rays that I got to upgrade from my old DVDs. And man, a lot of those are short, like 90, 97 minutes, but they're so goddamn entertaining.
Yeah.
So like, you mentioned that you might be seeing
the new Jackie Chan movie soon?
Yes. Okay. We'll see. I'm supposed to get a review link sometime. I hear it would have been out right now, but they're still in the middle of subtitling it. So we'll see how that goes. Railroad Tigers. It's Jackie Chan and a Chinese mainland director named Ding Sheng, who is... It's probably done Jackie Chan's best movies since, probably in the last 10 years. Jackie Chan's movies have been kind of up and down, but the best movies have been done with him collaborating with this director.
Yeah, cool. Well, I know you're a big Jackie Chan fan, so I hope you enjoy it.
I mean, even if it sucks, it's still Jackie Chan, so. I've seen Mr. Nice Guy.
We love you, Jackie. We'll do a Jackie Chan movie next year.
Oh, man.
Write it down. Which one? Super Cop?
Should I pick one?
Rumble in the Bronx? Forbidden Kingdom?
How about Miracles?
Police Story?
Let's do Mr. Cat and Lady Rose, a.k.a. Miracles. That's my favorite Jackie Chan film.
Is that the Pocketful of Miracles remake?
Yes.
Okay.
There you go. You can watch Pocketful of Miracles before it if you want. I'm not going
to. It's out of print.
No.
They'll have trouble finding it.
Is a Pocketful of Miracles like public domain?
No. Well, Glenn Ford and... Is it Betty Davis? No, it's not Betty Davis. Is it?
What's the other one? Because Frank Capra remade Pocketful of Miracles into something else. And then... Because he directed the original one and the other one. Lady for a Day. Lady for a Day is the original. Pocketful of Miracles is a remake of Lady for a Day, right?
Looking that up right now.
That might not be right. I was like, maybe Lady for a Day is like the million.
Google's not working so well now. Maybe it's just my phone.
Yeah, Lady for a Day is the original one.
Yeah, it's Betty Davis and Glenn Ford.
Yeah, in my mind,
1961.
I was thinking of Lady for a Day, which is Mae Robson and Gene Parker. Okay. And Warren William.
Okay. All right, we're going to wrap this up again. So at Junior Beho on Twitter, or check him out on filmsmash.com. Yep. And I'm at Setting the Frame on Twitter. So, yeah. Check me out, too. Check me out.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you so much, guys. Happy holidays. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.